from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The job numbers are out this morning, and they're not too encouraging. So it's probably not surprising that there's been a recent upswing in the number of people who are striking out on their own and entering the world of the self-employed. In our next hour forum, we're going to take a look at what it takes to work for yourself. What skills do you need if you're going to go it alone? Hint, it's not just about being good at something. We'll hear stories from people who are finding their way in the self-employed world and talk about how to manage the inevitable ups and downs when the only person you can complain about at work is you. Being self-employed, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. As you've been hearing on the news this morning, the new job figures are out, and they're not exactly a bright ray of summer sunshine. Overall unemployment is down slightly, but that's probably just because people are discouraged from job hunting, which may be why there seems to be an uptick in self-employment. In this hour of forum, we want to focus on that topic and a different kind of job hunt, the one that begins when you look in the mirror. Though hard statistics are difficult to come by, self-employment numbers seem to be growing, particularly among both older and younger workers. So what does it take to go out on your own? What kind of talent and temperament do you need? And are tough economic times the right time to head out on your own? Joining us now to help us sort through those questions, David Sharon. He's executive director of the Lester Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University of California, Berkeley's Haas School of Business. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Thanks for joining us. Nicole Levine joins us as well. She's executive director of the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment, which is a Bay Area nonprofit which provides low-income women with the training to start their own businesses. Nicole Levine, good morning.
Good morning.
And Steve King is here as well. He's partner in Emergent Research, which is a research and consulting firm that focuses on supporting entrepreneurs and small businesses. Steve King, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thanks all very much for joining us this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're also going to hear from a few people who are entering that brave new world. But I want to start about how you go about entering that. If in these difficult times you're thinking, you know, I would just rather go out and work for myself. I want to be self-employed. What are the first questions, I guess, that you ought to ask yourself? David Sharon?
Well, this is a great question. When you ask yourself, I want to be self-employed, I want to go out and do something on my own, you're taking on a tremendous responsibility for yourself. And you have to have the drive and the passion to really take that on, understand what you're going to do, who your customers are, and how are you going to support yourself in this effort? Supporting yourself is really the most important thing. When you start a small business, you're alone when you start. And it can be a very lonely task. So you have to look to others to help you in the tasks that you have in front of you.
And in the words that you just used, I'm interested in the fact, Steve King, that none of what David just described involved necessarily having brilliant expertise. It's really a series of other questions you need to be thinking about as well. Can I deal with working on my own? Do I have a way that I'm actually going to make money? What is it that I want to do that's going to attract customers? It's not enough just to be really smart or have a particular talent. Is that right?
That's correct. There a lot of people that go out on their own are very, very talented but don't have the business skills or are not willing to put the time and effort in on the business side to be successful. And so one of the things you have to remember when you go out on your own, you're wearing all hats. You have to sell, you have to market, you have to create demand for your product, you then have to deliver, and you have to do all that with a business model that, as David says, returns enough money for you to live.
So Nicole Levine, you can't just say, I'm sick of my work, I don't like my boss, I'm good at what I do, I'm going out on my own.
It's much more difficult than that. We always tell the women that go through our program that you want to be your own boss and it sounds wonderful and you'll have all this flexible time. But in truth, you become the boss. You become – all of your clients become your bosses. And it's actually much less glamorous. And so we really try and talk to people about the reality of going into business for themselves.
So let's create a kind of laundry list of the sort of questions that you ought to ask yourself, what would you start with, David Sharon, as you're kind of working your way through? Do you have to begin by creating a kind of business plan?
I think you do. I think you have to understand the cash requirements that are as you get into business, how much money you're going to have to spend to acquire product, how much money you're going to spend on marketing, how much revenue you're going to generate from the businesses that you begin, and where is that revenue? Is it in the short term or in the long term?
So this isn't – I mean, that begs the question, I guess, in a way, Steve King, about whether or not it makes sense to do this in tough times. I mean, it's sort of counterintuitive, I suppose. It seems like, boy, unemployment's – this isn't a good job situation, so maybe it's a good time for me to create my own job. And yet, precisely because it's not a good time, it's that much harder to start. Is that right?
Well, a lot of people have no choice. Jobs are very hard to come by now. We're seeing a structural shift towards contingent employment, part-timers, freelancers, contractors, and companies hiring fewer traditional full-time employees. And so in many ways, a down market isn't the ideal time to start a business, but for many people, they don't have a choice. The other side of the coin, and an argument that's often made that I'm kind of mixed on, but I do believe it's true, which is if you can make it now, you can make it anytime. Mm-hmm. And so being successful in a down market pretty much guarantees that you'll be even more successful when things get better.
Is this something that you should approach gradually, Nicole Levine? In other words, you know, start up your independent enterprise while you still – I mean in an ideal world – while you're still employed so that you're not just sort of – diving in all the way.
I think that's a fantastic idea. And I think having some experience in the business that you're going to go into is just really crucial. And for a lot of people, it may be a new endeavor for them. And so to kind of test the waters while they have the safety net of having a job is a wonderful option, though not always possible for many people.
You've each mentioned the importance of marketing, I think. And I think that may be something, and I say this as someone who is largely self-employed. I only work at KQED part-time. Underestimate. You tend to think, well, I'm good at what I do and people will know that I'm good at what I do. And in fact, they don't. And speak to that some, David Sharon, about,
sure,
about the ability to market, because in some ways, my sense is that you have to pay as much attention to that, if not more, than on your own expertise.
Absolutely. And you have to pay more attention to it because marketing is money, right? You're spending your own time and resources to go out and talk to customers. If you're talking to the wrong customers, you're wasting your time and money. So you have to be very careful about how you apply your marketing skills and marketing techniques and make sure that you're focusing on the right people. We talk a lot about experimentation at the business school and how new companies, when they get started, they're testing the waters. They go out and talk to customers and they become very customer-centric. And in developing their products and services, to the extent that you can focus in very clearly on a set of customers and then develop your products and services to match their needs, you're starting off at a better position than just simply thinking, I've got a product, it's me, I want to sell, how do I sell me? Go out and find some customers. Think about the marketing side. How do you develop that customer base first?
How do you do that with the women who are your clientele, Nicole Levine, lower income women by and large? How do you develop with them this idea of marketing and what it is they're going to have to do? Give us, if you can, a specific example of how someone has an idea and how you worked with them to develop an actual way to go out and sell that idea.
It's a great question. So our training actually helps women. It's a 12-week program, and we walk women through writing a business plan. So every piece of the business plan is addressed during that training. And as you can imagine, an enormous amount of time is spent on marketing. And we start out with market research. And it just happens in the classroom where they ask each other questions about their business. They learn how to present their business. They learn how to give their – we call it a 30-second commercial, also called an elevator pitch. So there's a lot of testing it out within the classroom to begin with and then taking it out into the broader market.
It sounds like, Steve King, that part of what people need to think about really are this whole kind of list of entrepreneurial skills that you have to have. In other words, if you're thinking about going out on your own, you really have to – are you comfortable knocking on doors? Can you live with people saying, no, I don't want you? I mean, what sort of aspects, I guess, of an entrepreneurial temperament do you need to have if you're going to go down this road?
Well, you definitely have to be resilient and accept failure as part of the business because selling and selling yourself will often result in people turning you down. So resilience is important. Agility, a willingness to shift and adjust and experiment, as David said, and to find the right clients, to find the right niche for yourself. And And you have to be pretty focused and being able to work on your own. I mean, being self-employed in particular often means having the skills and the diligence to get your work done in a world of lots of distractions.
I want to come back to the sort of community question and the ability to sort of work as a solo act in a moment. But just staying with this entrepreneurship question for a moment, at your center, which is called the Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation, is being self-employed and being an entrepreneur one and the same?
Not necessarily. Entrepreneurship, the way we teach it, is how you get to employ others, right? And that you might end up having capital coming into the company from outside. And when you do that, you are basically becoming an employee, right? You're an employee of the company that you've started. So entrepreneurship is about growth and scale and the way that we teach it. Self-employment can be about that also. You might find yourself being displaced from a job and then trying to find a place in the world. And you might end up growing a company around what you do. But there are other people who actually take a view that I want to be my boss, and I don't want anyone else to tell me what I do. So I'm going to take on a self-employment. I'm the boss. I have all the capital in the company. I own the entire company. And that's a fine way to go. But when you do that, it is taking on, as Steve says, all of the different hats. You're going to be the marketer. You're going to be the product developer. You're going to be the capital source for any of the needs that you have. And you have to accept that responsibility. The community piece is also very important in this. No matter what you do, finding support in the community, whether it's an accountant, whether it's a set of customers or a set of classmates that can help you along the way, that's a big help whether you're entrepreneurial and trying to scale a business or whether you're going to be self-employed and operating as a self-employed or sole proprietor.
So part of what you need to do as you're going down this road is not only to think about what it is that you have to offer and how you're going to get people to buy what you have to offer, but you also need to start thinking about, well, who's going to help me with various aspects of things? Who's going to help me with whether it's tax planning or anything? You need to develop that community of support, Nicole Levine?
Absolutely. I think it's as you mentioned at the very beginning, it can be very isolating to be by yourself. Starting your own business and developing that community is absolutely critical to your success.
Let's talk about what the times are promising for. I know these are big generalizations, but I'd be curious to know if you think if this is a good time for particular kinds of enterprises. I was thinking when the announcement was going out, I guess yesterday, about the new aspects of the new healthcare plan kicking in, that maybe that will generate a whole new field of people who can interpret what it is the healthcare plan involves. I mean, what possibilities are out there right now that make sense to go into given the times in which we live? David?
Well, certainly there's a lot of excitement about the digital media world continuing. The iPad, I think, is going to open up a whole new set of opportunities for individuals creating applications on that platform that will have value for the individual. Many of those companies will be small. They'll be individual talents putting forth a game, putting forth content that will be delivered in that domain. Certainly the healthcare industry and the changes that are going to take place there are going to open up a number of opportunities both for entrepreneurs and for others inside that set of institutions as it goes through change.
So even thinking about things like the demographics of the country, that we are increasingly an aging society, and thinking about sort of what that might mean and sort of what opportunities there could be within that new world?
Absolutely. I was surprised. My mother is 75 years old. I talked to her the other day, and she, unbeknownst to me, had bought a Wii and was doing exercises and other things on the Wii. I think that's just a tremendous example of the opportunities that are out there to serve us as an aging population.
What other things strike you right now? What are you finding in your research, Steve King, about places that are more ripe for possibility?
A lot of service businesses and assisting people in their day-to-day lives that are very busy. It's amazing how many companies out there are doing dog walking and tutoring students and helping with sports. And the things that we used to either do on our own or our parents did, we're increasingly outsourcing
to
third parties.
Can you make a living being a dog walker?
You sure can. You sure can. There's actually a franchised company that's planning on going public later this year that started with a single dog walker. And they're up to about 40 franchisees at this point. So you can actually make a living. And I'm fascinated. There's ex-Giants baseball player who coaches baseball in the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area and has hundreds of kids that attend his camps, play on his teams. So services broadly defined. Certainly healthcare, the aging population, the desire for people to age in place and not leave their homes requires a lot of support and services. Tech has a whole wide range. Clean tech is one that's starting up now that we believe will continue to grow quite rapidly. So there's a lot of areas that you can work in, but the key is to know your area, have experience in your area, and be prepared to serve that area.
What are you finding that the women who come to your place are interested in starting up, and what seems to be the most promising, Nicole?
Well, it's interesting. So this is a little different than what you both have talked about, because we are talking about micro enterprises, which are fewer than 5 employees, less than $35,000 in capital needs. And so what we're really seeing is businesses fulfilling a local need. We had a client business tour this week where we ended at the Front Porch Restaurant, is in San Francisco's Mission District, and it's a thriving business in the Mission. They know their community. They know what everybody in the neighborhood wants. And we've got businesses throughout the Mission District that are serving the local needs of the community and really thriving.
Well, we're joined now by someone who has taken this step and has developed their own individual enterprise. Danae Ringelman is the Chief Operating Officer and founder of Indiegogo, which is a collaborative way to fund ideas. And walk us through, if you would, Danae Ringelman. First, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
And tell us something about how you came up with this idea and what it is you actually do.
Sure. Well, Indiegogo is actually a collaborative funding platform for ideas and ventures. So anyone with an idea, whether it's creative, cause, or entrepreneurial, can use Indiegogo's tools to engage their customers, offer perks, raise money, and keep 100% ownership. So in a way, my customers are entrepreneurs. And the way we got started is I have 2 co-founders, and we all come from traditional backgrounds, working in finance and strategy and technology. But we were all working late nights and weekends, working with charities and artists and nonprofit organizations to try to raise money. And we all got quite frustrated with it. And I actually had a pretty heartbreaking experience with a 70-year-old filmmaker sending me his script, hoping that I could finance it just because I worked at a bank back when I was 23 years old. So when I got together with my partners, it all came together when I went back to business school, actually, at Berkeley. And we were all driven by this passion to make fundraising easier and better and more efficient. And our goal since the beginning, and it continues to be that, is to democratize fundraising.
It sounds in a way like what you're providing is a service for the very people we're talking about who want to be self-employed. So that, for example, take your 70-year-old filmmaker, someone who wants to make films, what you're doing is trying to help that person fulfill his particular self-employment dream.
Yes. Well, that's exactly who we're trying to serve and who we are serving. And what we're doing is we're providing anybody the DIY tools to reach out to their own audiences and followers and customers, leveraging the social media world that we live in today with Facebook and Twitter, and reach out to their communities, whether it's the people who live in their neighborhood, if they're starting a restaurant, to actually raise money from the people that are going to benefit from the product. So rather than go into debt and max out your credit cards, why not go to the people that you're going to want to sell to anyways, test your idea with them, get them involved, have them actually fund your idea, and then you're off to the races.
And so someone who has an idea like the one that Nicole Levine was just describing could go to your website, get those tools, but also they could post something about their enterprise on your website, right? And people then who are interested in that and supporting that venture would know how to go about doing that.
Exactly. We actually have a wine bar in New York City, a kosher wine bar, that used Indiegogo to raise their marketing capital to buy, you know, press and take out ads in the magazines and the food magazines in New York. They actually pre-sold invites to their opening launch party, discounted wine. They used Indiegogo to raise that money to get themselves off the ground. So it's a tool that gives them it's basically a tool that gives them the tools to reach out to their communities efficiently to make funding fast and collaborative and easy for everybody involved.
Danae Ringelman, the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder of Indiegogo. Just a last quick question, Danae. Are you making a living?
I am. We are. And we are going to be hiring a lot of people. So it's exciting to be talking about that. I know the jobless numbers weren't so great, but hopefully we'll make a small dent going forward.
Danae Ringelman, the Chief Operating Officer again of Indiegogo. Thanks. Thanks for telling us your story this morning.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
What do you take from a story like Danae Ringelman's? What has she done right, David Sharon? I know she's a former student of yours.
She is a former student of mine. One of the things that she did right was she had a clear passion in mind to serve this community. But as Steve rightly pointed out, one thing that she did was they experimented a lot at the beginning of how do they build the services that they have on their website. And in experiencing how that worked in the early days, they changed what they did. So they originally started out only as a film platform where the 70-year-old filmmaker could get his film funded. And then they have expanded that to a whole series of people who are the self-employed.
So if the example Steve King was citing earlier about someone who wants to create a business to help serve very busy people, they could now take advantage of the service that Danae is offering.
Absolutely. That adaptability, the flexibility, the resilience are all the traits that you look for in these people. Danae and her team definitely have that.
Let's go to some of our emailed questions that are already coming in. We're going to open up our phone lines, too, in just a moment. Here's the number. If you have a self-employed story you want to tell us or a question about how you go about starting that process, here's the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us your questions at forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your question or comment there. Here's one that's come in from Terry. She writes, I was lucky enough to translate very smoothly from my prior job to independent consulting. So far, business has been great. However, as nothing is ever guaranteed, I can't help but worry that that might not always be the case. So, and she goes on to describe her concerns about whether or not she'll get unemployment, so forth and so on. I mean, that's part of what you have to be able to live with, right, Nicole Levine, is ups and downs. You can have good years, and I know this from experience, you can have bad years, and you have to be someone who's able to ride that roller coaster.
Absolutely. I think you have to have plan B and plan C, and you have to have a network of people around you that are also willing to help you get through the hard times.
What do you tell your clients about that? Is this just a temperament that you have to be able to live with uncertainty, or how do you plan, I guess, to live with uncertainty?
Well, I do think it's a temperament. It's something we talk about is self-employment the right thing for you, and do you have the ability to withstand the ups and downs, and do you have the backup plans in place, and do you have, again, the network in place to help withstand?
Steve King, what are you finding in your research about that, about people's willingness to contend with uncertainty?
It's interesting. It's a big problem for a lot of self-employed people. We find that in any given point in time when we survey self-employed, about 40 to 50% of them say they love it. About 30% say they hate it, and the rest are sort of indifferent, if you will. But the reasons why they don't like being self-employed, loneliness is always listed as number one. But the uncertainty, the lack of stability, there's a whole bunch of words that are used to describe the problem. Those are always number two after loneliness.
We'll come back and talk about that and about what you can do to have this sometimes solitary venture be not quite such a lonely experience. Again, here's the number if you want to join us. Phone lines are already filled, so we'll take those calls when we come back. But here's the number if you want to get in line. That's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Back with more about being self-employed in just a moment. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, being self-employed. What does it take to do that? What do you have to have in the way of temperament and talent? What questions should you ask yourself if you want to go down that road? Our guests include David Sharon. He's executive director of the Lester Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University of California, Berkeley. Nicole Levine, who directs the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment, a Bay Area nonprofit, and Steve King with Emergent Research. We welcome your calls as well at 866-733-6786 or emails at forum@kqed.org. We'll try to get in as many calls as we can over the course of this half hour. We're also going to hear another story from a self-employed person, Herb Cohn, in just a moment. But this email, I think, leads off where we wanted to go next. Kathy from San Rafael writes that, I think to be able to work on your own, you have to be your own boss, you have to be an accountant, you have to be a secretary, you have to be the chief bottle washer. It takes a lot of discipline, and it can get lonely. This is right where you were leaving off, Steve King, before. What do you each tell people about the sort of loneliness of self-employment?
Several things. One is make sure you don't just lock yourself up in your office. And there's a lot of alternatives. Interestingly enough, I stopped at Starbucks on my way here today. And in the Starbucks I was at, I have a habit of watching this stuff. 6 out of the 14 people sitting down appeared to be doing their jobs. And so, you know, third places are a popular place to work. There's a whole new world called co-working, shared office spaces, where you can rent a desk and get access to office facilities, but there's also a community there of like-minded people that you can network with. You can also find a surprising number of people are working from home now in most communities, and there's usually groups, clubs, activities. In my own town, if you wanted to, you could spend all day with other people and not get your job done, actually. So
but
just get out.
It also speaks, Nicole Levine, to maybe the dangers of working at home. And on the one hand, it sounds really appealing. But if you stay inside all the time, that poses other questions.
Absolutely. That can really start to, you know, crush your self-esteem. And it's why one of the parts of our program that's most important is once people graduate from the program, we then have an ongoing support program where they get to come back in and meet with each other. We have peer networking groups. We have events where they can come in and meet other clients and also people from the community.
Is this something, David Sharon, where people can sort of learn perhaps to split the difference, that they might want to work solitary some of the time, but they also want to make sure that they're learning still from other people? My daughter happens to be self-employed, and one thing she said to me recently was that she wants to be able to still have learning relationships with other people so that she's not just acting solo all the time.
Exactly. Learning from other people is really a critical piece, and we have two wonderful individuals here who provide these services, including the University of California. We do a lot of work to bring the community in. And when you think about building your community around the self-employed circumstance that you have or the entrepreneurial circumstance, try to think about not only the peer group or the customer group, but building a mentor community into what you do so that you have people who are more experienced than you. I would venture to guess that almost everyone who does this has a community that they can reach into. Here in the Bay Area, we're blessed with lots of resources for people to join. We all hopefully know how to do the electronic side of this these days, whether that's on Facebook or LinkedIn, to generate those communities. But it's really important to get the mentoring piece in, and something we really stress to our people as they venture out into the world.
Let's hear what our listeners have to say, and then we'll get to our next self-employment story. But Patrick joins us first. Patrick, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I love this topic, and thanks for talking about it. I'm a 10-year entrepreneur, and I will say to anybody out there that is considering being an entrepreneur, go now, today. Don't stop. Go do it. You know, my forte is tourism. And 29 years ago, tourism was in the dark age. Today, you can niche out tourism to very, very fine niches, leveraging technology. And it allows you to offer to a subset population tours that they probably wouldn't consider. But there's a marketplace for it. I mean, everywhere I look as an entrepreneur around me, I see opportunity.
Patrick, thanks. It's an important point, Nicole Levine, about just – it's how you see in a way, isn't it? It's about perception.
Absolutely. I just visited a client in the Mission District, the RK Workshop, and she was working in a job, and she had all these – she's all these skills. She loves art. She's an artist, and she loved local talent, and she brought together all the things that she loves the most in this beautiful store in the Mission District. And – she is an absolute success story because she was able to see in a little different way.
It's an interesting quality to think about. I mean, we've talked about being able to live with uncertainty, being able to market, being able to work solo, remembering how to find a community. But we're also talking, Steve King, about the ability to see possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Opportunities in the marketplace. I mean, gaps in terms of what's being served, gaps in terms of price and performance, new business model opportunities. I love the tourism example because technology is enabling smaller and smaller niches. And so markets that were way too small to service 10 or 15 years ago can now support real businesses today.
How so? How does that work? What is
technology allows you to reach a large enough segment of the population.
I see.
So before, if you were trying to sell niche travel services, how did you find those people? Now with online media, they'll find you.
So if you want to do, let's say, best places to kayak or whatever, you can find those people now in a way that you could not before.
Yeah, using the internet, you can find them, they can find you, and you can create a large enough niche that's traditionally was distributed to create a viable business. We're seeing a lot of that.
Let's hear from Phil in Oakland next. Phil, go ahead.
This is Terrell.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Terrell.
That's all right. Great topic, by the way. I opened a little Italian restaurant here in Oakland in the Laurel District a year ago, March 6th, and it was, you know, during some of the worst part of the recession. And I hear all the things that your people are saying about getting funding and building a community and all that, but they're not really getting to the nuts and bolts. Once you open your doors, I mean, like for us, I work 6.5 days a week,
yep,
15 to 17 hours a day, and it's like going to battle every day. And then you have employees to deal with, and then you have a workforce that doesn't have the same work ethic as some of our older people have. And so people need to be aware of that. And I'm not trying to scare people away from becoming entrepreneurs, but just be realistic about what it is you're getting yourself into.
It's a great point, Terrell. Thank you for bringing that to us, because it is really important to have your eyes wide open, David Chern, about what you're getting into. And being self-employed doesn't mean working less. In fact, it usually means the opposite.
It usually means working more. And it's all of the hats and doing all of the work and dealing with the employees. You know, we have a little saying at the business school where there are lots of opportunities out there. There are many opportunities. Entrepreneurs see them all the time, but you have to pick the opportunity that you really want to pursue.
And you also, I think, something that you also fight, and I'll just say this also from my own personal experience, is that it's hard to be off. It's hard to because you don't have paid vacation and you're always worried about whether or not you're going to get your next gig. So you have to learn to contend with that too. And so that also is a personality aspect.
It's a personality aspect. Also, there's a need almost in many of these situations to have a partner.
Yeah.
Right? And the sole individual, the true sole proprietor going out there, you are at risk. If you have children and your children get sick or you get sick, you have to consider the business risk of, you know, do you have to go into your restaurant today?
Hmm.
And oftentimes what you're going to look for in the early stages of a business is the strong partner, somebody who can back you up, somebody who can work with you.
We're going to hear now from Herb Cohn, who is a self-employed certified public accountant, a CPA. He's also the president of the San Francisco Council of District Merchants Association. Herb, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to chime in, if you would please, on the topics that we've been considering and sort of how you've gone about contending with these issues. We were just talking about the fact that one of the things you should go into this eyes wide open is that you're not going to work less. You're probably going to have to work more. Has that been your experience as well?
Absolutely. I think that I started this 25 years ago, and so I've had a lot of experience being self-employed. And I think that one of the tools you can use is to not just jump off the cliff, but put your toe in the water. And when I started, I worked 2 days a week for another CPA firm just to supplement my income while I was building my practice.
And so how? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that's a tool you can use.
And what about the other way that you have to contend with some of the things that as you're putting your toe in that water, you've also got to plan for things like benefits. And I know you've done some work in that area as well, because suddenly you don't necessarily have health care. You don't necessarily have some of the things that have come with that salary you once had before. So how did you go about planning for that?
Well, that can be difficult, but I'm in a service industry, so it's a little bit there are service associations, there are industry associations, and, for example, I'm a member of the National Association of American Institute of CPAs and the California Society of CPAs, and both of those institutions have group health plans that I could join. So that made getting health care both affordable and obtainable.
Any other thoughts from our panelists on how you ought to plan and contend for that aspect of things? Because it's such a big thing. That's not a given. You can, if you've been used to having that covered for, that has to be part of your business plan too, right? How you're going to take care of not only yourself, but perhaps your family as well.
I think this is a really important point to get across to the entrepreneurs, especially the first-timers. Oftentimes what you'll do, and we talked about this, Steve, a little bit before, is you'll go out and you'll price your service or your product low. You'll think that's the right thing to do to get into the market. In fact, if you think about the business as a business, even if you're self-employed, and you price it legitimately, you build into your costs the benefits that you need to get, your customers will respond to that. They'll understand it.
So not selling yourself short is yet another attribute that you have to have.
Absolutely.
And Herb Cohn, speak to that, because let me bounce a thought off of you. A good friend of mine who's also self-employed said that he knows that he's priced something right when he's bidding on a particular job. If he feels fine if he gets the job, and he feels fine that if he doesn't. In other words, he knows that he's sort of hit the mark if he feels okay if he doesn't get a particular job. Does that make sense to you? How did you go about pricing what it is? How do you go about deciding what you're worth?
Well, that is a very tough area to try and decide about how to price your services. And I think that it's a competitive marketplace out there, and I think that you have to do research. You have to check around what other people are charging, see what the range is out there. But I've always said my outlook has been a little bit different, which is I think that people, when they're looking for a service, they want quality, they want timeliness, and they want price. Those are the three big things they're looking for. If you give them two of those three things, then you can play around with the other one. And in my opinion, I think price is the one that you can play around with. If you give them timely service and you give them quality service, then you can raise your prices, and they're more than willing to pay for it.
Do you disagree with that, David Sharon, about pricing?
I think that's exactly right. If you focus on the quality and service delivery, you do have an opportunity there. You're focusing in on a market, and we always talk about focusing on a niche market to start. You get some pricing flexibility there and take advantage of it.
Herb Cohn, thanks. Thanks for joining us and telling us your story on this morning's forum.
You're welcome.
Back to our callers. Chris in San Francisco joins us next. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, Chris, and I'm an architectural illustrator. I've been working for myself for 36 years, and I just wanted to bring up four quick points that measure into how successful or not you are as a sole proprietor. First one is it's better if you really, really, really like what you do. Secondly, it's really good if there is a market for what you really like to do. If you're deficient in any one of those, it's not as easy to be a success. The other two points is to have patience and to have discipline. I work at home. I just clocked out at 10:30 in a little black book, and I'm going to clock back in at 10 till 11 because I'm making this phone call. Otherwise,
what if I keep you on the line for longer than
well,
that?
Well, then I'll adjust. But you know, the problem there is that if you're not careful or disciplined, you can blur your home life, you can blur your professional life.
Yeah.
So that works for me. It's a simple thing: just clock out, clock in, and. The office goes away or the home goes away, depending on what I'm signing up for.
Chris, thanks. Terrific point. I'm just going to hold you there because our panel here in the studio are all nodding their heads. On the virtue of discipline, Nicole Levine, I think that's a terrific point.
Oh, it's absolutely. It's so easy to blur the lines both ways, where you work all the time or you don't work enough.
And it's one of the dangers of the web as well. I mean, you can find yourself, if you're computer-driven in your work, you can also sort of wander off somewhere and forget to come back. So it does require that sort of discipline. Couple of emails coming in. I recently left my job to pursue a path of self-employment. This is Dan writing. Financially, it's not the most desirable option, but I think where it really shines is the feeling of control it gives. Jim writes in, I'm a self-employed graphic designer. I've been at it for 20 years. I can't overstate the value of loving your work. So a number of people, is this what you find in your research too? And it's what we just heard from our last caller, that you have to have that. You have to have a certain passion about what you do.
It certainly helps and is almost required to be successful in the long run if you're to be passionate about what you do. And then what we find in our research, and everyone finds, that self-employed and small business owners are doing it because they want to be their own boss, is always the number one reason given. And so it's a combination of passion for what you do and a passion for wanting to be your own boss and believing that's the right path for you in life.
But also, David Sharon, not to be solely guided by passion, because you've got to combine passion with a market.
Absolutely. The caller's statement of you have to have a market behind what you do isn't just an incredibly important lesson. Especially when it's the first timer going out or somebody who's just attempting to get the toe in the water, you're going to hear a lot of no's. And that's part of the resilience factor of the entrepreneur, is you've got to go out and find somebody who has a problem that you can solve, that you're looking for the yes, but you're going to get a lot of no's along the way.
Rich in Los Altos joins us next. Rich, go ahead. Go ahead, Rich. You're on. We lost Rich. Let's go to Jack in Warwick, Massachusetts, joining us on the Sirius Satellite Network. Jack, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
What I do is I make custom wooden windows in Warwick, Massachusetts. My name's Jack Cadwell. And how I got into it was I wanted to have a job that I could do in my shop at the end of my road in the country. And I looked around and went to work in shops and learned how to make windows and then went out and did it on my own. And it works really well, but given the internet now, niche manufacturing has really taken off. And instead of being a service job, it's a manufacturing job, turning raw materials into a finished good. And basically, you get to keep more of the value. And it makes sense. I think it's the way the economy is heading, but it's under the radar quite a bit.
Jack, thanks. Thanks for offering your experience and your perspective on this. Let's hear next from Manjiri in Palo Alto. Manjiri, go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Wonderful program. Thank you so much. So I have been a yoga teacher for almost 10 years, and I noticed that people are so stressed out. So I went ahead and started a website called preciousretreats.com that offers theme-based relaxation retreats. And I was wondering how I could find my audience.
Hmm. Okay, so how to go about marketing. Any thoughts from Steve or Nicole or David on how you go about trying to find the audience that Manjiri is looking for?
Well, I think the good news is there's a good market there. Lots of people are stressed out right now. And so we're finding more and more small business taking advantage of social media, taking advantage of new media on the internet, and creating sites and participating in social media through Facebook and Twitter and reaching out to people and making it clear about the area that they're involved in. In this case, you're trying to reach stressed out people and you're trying to let them know about your services. And so you can do that with keywords with Google where you do ads. You can do that with your own site, a blog on being stressed out and what you can do. Take advantage of Facebook to reach out to your friends and your friends' friends in the community. So there's a lot of social media activity that's relatively low cost. It takes time that you can use now to market and attract your niche audience.
Steve King is partner in Emergent Research, a research and consulting firm focused on supporting small business. You know, as we go through this conversation on a day when the latest job figures are somewhat discouraging, makes me wonder about the kind of public policy consequence for this, Nicole Levine. In other words, should we be thinking about job creation in a different way? Should we be thinking about providing breaks for the self-employed in a different way? Are there training ramifications for this? Are we really thinking enough, I guess, about the society that we are becoming?
we are definitely not thinking enough about the power of self-employment to create jobs. And actually, I'm so glad you asked this question. We just put out a paper called Job Creation Through Microenterprise Development. And an amazing statistic, at the height of the recession in 2009, our clients, low-income, high-potential women, provided a total of 2,250 jobs. That's just here in the Bay Area for themselves and other people through businesses. And we are not talking about how self-employment is actually providing jobs for people themselves and for the people that they're employing.
You're the biz school guy, David Sharon. I mean, how do you see this? Because if you think it through, there are a lot of interesting consequences to this, political consequences as well.
Definitely political consequences to the high unemployment rate. We hope that that unemployment rate comes down. I think from how we approach it in the entrepreneurship program is this is an opportunity for people to go out and work with these individuals. I love Jack in Massachusetts doing the window business. I think that's a great example of how technology, the internet, and distribution of that product can actually work for the individuals and how those individuals can start to build smaller business.
Are there tax policies then that ought to be considered that would make Jack more able to do what Jack does in his back shop in Massachusetts?
Well, that's a great question. I am not a policy person, so I'm going to hold off on that one.
Well, yeah, I think the policy side, our policies are mostly geared for larger organizations, and even our small business policies are geared towards high growth organizations, firms that are going to hire a lot of people. And the reason for that is that studies have shown that those are the companies that generate the greatest number of new jobs. So the policies are there for that reason. But I think there are a lot of shifts we could make to make it easier for people who are self-employed.
Such as?
Right now, we have the self-employment tax is more or less a double tax. Healthcare can be an issue. The new healthcare bill kind of fixes that. And I've forgotten the name of the accountant who was on that talked about
– Herb Cohn.
Yeah, Herb had a great example. Go to federations and trade associations and stuff. Unemployment insurance is not available to self-employed. And if you
Let's just touch on that briefly because Danny Bringer, our engineer, was bringing this up. If you are self-employed and you're having a really bad year, you can't go down to your unemployment office and get unemployment benefits, right?
No, you cannot. Unless you've set yourself up as a corporation and have paid unemployment insurance, which very few people do. So, no, you're not available. You're not able to get it. And then if you are getting unemployment and you start to become self-employed and you report that, you will lose your benefits as you get going.
So a lot of things to consider in the public policy realm that's part of this, too. Let's hear from Beth next in Oakland. Beth, go ahead.
Hi, I've been self-employed for the last 4 years, helping authors get their books out into the world, and I've learned the hard way that sales is really one of the most important, if not the most important skill we can have as self-employed people. I was wondering if your guests could talk about the skill of sales.
Beth, thanks.
Sure, I can. This is Nicole. I can talk about how very important it is. I think it starts really with presentation. Self-confidence is actually the first place where that starts. Is really being confident about what you are selling and being able to speak about it clearly and effectively. And there's so many programs. You know, Toastmasters is a fantastic way to do that. So that's the first piece is the self-confidence. And then of course there's the technical knowledge that you have to have as well. But really, I wanted to talk about that self-confidence piece and being able to present effectively.
Other thoughts on learning sales that Beth points out, David?
Well, we get a lot of MBAs who come in who need these skills, and this is true, I think, of most of us. We're mostly not in the sales position, but you can train yourself to get there. You can train yourself by simply talking to some of the friendly people that you have around you and see what sort of response you get. Building into it is an important thing. A lot of people will be scared of getting that first client. Go out and get talk to Steve King, talk to Nicole, talk to your neighbor. Practice this. It's a very hard thing to do, but once you get comfortable and you get confident, as Nicole says, in what you're selling and who you are, it becomes easier.
And going back to that sort of self-inventory that we began the program with, before you go down this road, if you ask yourself that question, am I comfortable going out and selling, and do I like that aspect of things? And if your answer to that is a profound no, I don't want to do that, that tells you something pretty important, right, about whether or not you should go down this particular path?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Teal in Berkeley writes, I've been self-employed for 10 years. I offer a service, so my customers are coming to me because they have a need. Even though they are coming to me, I feel that customer service is the number one thing I can offer them. We haven't really talked about that a lot yet, but that's a key thing too. You've got to be good at giving your clients what they want. You have to be very tuned in a way that you don't necessarily have to be if you have a salary.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And one of the advantages you have being self-employed or a small business owner is you, the decision maker, are at the interface with the customer. In larger corporations, oftentimes the decision makers are further removed and so therefore are unable to actually provide the level of customer service. I don't want to mention the company, but I had a very bad experience with a well-known company yesterday around customer service. It just took me like 10 calls to get to someone who could fix my problem.
Airlines maybe, or there are lots of possibilities that we could go through, but we won't. Couple of people. Here's an interesting idea, and we're almost out of time. But this person is saw an opportunity in parenting. Andrea writes, I felt as a parent, there was a lot that was sorely missing, and so starting something called Parents Guild, I took this plunge because I was passionate about the need. Parenting is hard, and the opportunity to help others was something that I wanted to pursue. So it's another aspect of sort of seeing what's around you. Just have a moment left, so maybe just quick last thoughts from each of you about what you think people ought to be thinking about if they're wanting to go down this road. Nicole, start us out.
Sure. I think it's a really exciting time to actually start a business. And as we are seeing, we really are having success with people creating jobs for themselves and for others. But you really have to think about, as you have talked about, is this the right time in your life to go into business for yourself and gather both the technical skills and the network of people that will help you be successful?
Steve King?
Talk to people that are currently doing it and talk to people that either aren't happy or have failed. We tend to celebrate in the press and the media success stories, but a lot of people have failed. And so try to get different perspectives before you make the jump.
Well, and even perhaps not failed, but just realizing how tough it can be.
Right.
The call we got from Terrell earlier, who started his restaurant, that he's doing 15-hour days, and you have to be ready for that part of it as well. Yeah, David Sharon.
It's a great time to go off on your own, but the idea of experimentation, getting your toe in the water, is a great concept. You know, don't put everything to risk at the start. Put some things to risk. And think about the failure modes, but also look to what we call analogs, companies that you want to emulate, that you want to look like. So the yoga teacher with the stress reduction piece, go find somebody who's running a business not similar to that, not directly on top of it, but something similar that you can say, here's how they marketed their product.
David Sharon at the UC School of Business, the Lester Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. David, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Steve King is with Emergent Research, a research and consulting firm. Steve, thanks as well.
Thank you.
And Nicole Levine joined us too. She's Executive Director of the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. Nicole, thanks for being with us this morning. Forum is produced by Tina Lorberg, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor, Dan Zoll. Executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.